Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24-7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the sanctions against Russia announced today by the Secretary of the Treasury in response to their meddling in the U.S. election, which do not target oligarchs and government officials close to Putin or in any way affect Russia's intelligence services or impact its economy. Dr. Michael Carpenter, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense with responsibility for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia, who was Director for Russia on the National Security Council, joins us to discuss Trump's peculiar reluctance to criticize Putin, even in the face of the apparent attack on a NATO member's soil using a weapon of mass destruction, Novichok, a Soviet-era military nerve agent. We will assess the dangerous symmetry of Putin surrounding himself with sycophants, hardliners, and hawks in the Kremlin, while Trump does the same in the White House as he fires those that try to restrain his reckless impulses while bringing aboard sycophants and hardliners like his new Secretary of State and hawks like John Bolton, who is apparently poised to replace General McMaster. Then we'll examine the speculation in the press that Trump is about to fire his Attorney General Sessions and replace him with the EPA head Scott Pruitt, using the Vacancies Reform Act of 1998 to limit Special Counsel Mueller's probe. Jack Blum, an expert on white-collar financial crime and international tax evasion, who was a staff attorney with the Senate Antitrust Subcommittee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a consultant to the United Nations Center on Transnational Corporations, joins us to discuss if such a move is possible and whether in subpoenaing the Trump Organization, Mueller has crossed a red line laid down by Trump. Then finally, we will speak with economist Dean Baker, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, about Trump's choice of a TV pitchman, Lawrence Kudlow, as his new head of the National Economic Council, a supply-side cheerleader who advised the governor of Kansas to implement a sweeping tax cut plan to produce bountiful growth that instead has crippled the state to the point of bankruptcy. We will also discuss Dean Baker's article in the Los Angeles Times, "If Trump wants to get reelected, he should rethink his Federal Reserve picks." And joining us now is Michael Carpenter, who's a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense with responsibility for Russia, Ukraine, Eurasia, the Balkans, and conventional arms control. He previously served in the White House as a foreign policy advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and as Director for Russia at the National Security Council. He's now a Senior Director of the Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement at the University of Pennsylvania and a Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Michael Carpenter.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be with you.
Thank you. And there's a peculiar reluctance on the part of President Trump to say anything critical about Vladimir Putin or Russian activities. But using a weapon of mass destruction, a very rare Soviet-era nerve gas, Novichok, on British soil against an exiled Russian and his daughter who lives in Moscow is pretty flagrant. I can't think of any other way to describe it, and it's mystifying why it's happening and why Putin is being so reckless. But the British have condemned it, and indeed, when the British condemned it, the Secretary of State echoed those remarks and was promptly fired. I'm not suggesting that was the reason why, but still, again, there's been this long reluctance. Finally today, the President, in a meeting with the Irish Prime Minister, did suggest that it wasn't a good thing that he was joining with the others, but Theresa May's made strong statements. Macron made a very, very strong statement. When are we going to hear something from our president?
I suspect we won't hear anything at all, Ian, for the reasons you cited at the beginning, because of his peculiar, at this point it's gone beyond peculiar, reluctance to criticize Vladimir Putin for anything. We've seen a very strong statement from Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. You mentioned that Rex Tillerson had a strong statement right before he was fired. I think this is now fitting into a game plan that the administration is running with regards to Russia, and that is namely to have cabinet-level officials take a more strident stand, a more hawkish stand towards Russia to prove that the administration actually sees a threat from Russia. But President Trump is just simply unwilling to go there. And, you know, it begs the question why. I think we all suspect why. But there is this dualism now in our foreign policy, and it's very apparent to everyone, including to our allies and other countries around the world, that the president says one thing, members of the cabinet say another.
So what do you think it is then? I mean, it's as though he doesn't want to offend Putin in any way, and he keeps signaling that. So what does Putin have over him? I mean, when you have the former head of American intelligence, General Clapper, saying that for all intents and purposes, Vladimir Putin is Trump's case officer, that's an extraordinary statement in itself coming from a former head of American intelligence. So what do you think's going on here?
Well, you know, I don't want to speculate too much, and that's what the Mueller investigation is for, is to get to the facts of the case. But if I were proceeding with the investigation that Mueller has now as his responsibility, I would treat the Christopher Steele dossier as a roadmap for the investigation. So far, there has been nothing in that dossier that has been disproven or that has been factually incorrect. And there have been a lot of aspects of the dossier that have been confirmed already. And we've seen a former Russian spy die in Moscow in December of last year under very mysterious circumstances. The gentleman, Oleg Erovinkin, was suspected to be a source for the dossier. And now we see Sergei Skripal poisoned in the UK, as you mentioned, with a chemical nerve agent. And there's been some reporting to suggest that Mr. Skripal was talking to either Christopher Steele or some of his associates. And so this is all starting to add up. And it's all part of one giant sort of hole here. And you know, I don't know exactly how far the relationship between Mr. Trump and Russians of various different sorts goes, but there's clearly something there. And so, you know, Mueller will get to the bottom of it. We'll see. But there's a very clear reluctance on the part of Mr. Trump, not just to criticize Putin, but to take any actions that will have a significant impact on Russia. And the sanctions announcement that was unveiled today by the Treasury Department is a case in point. These sanctions are completely inconsequential. There is nothing there. These are rehashing the same sanctions that were applied in December of 2016 by the Obama administration and just wrapping a bow around them.
And they're certainly not going after the Siloviki, the cronies, who all of former intelligence people who become billionaires, who, and Putin sort of regulates the oligarchs and punishes those. Indeed, Berezovsky, one of the more prominent ones, died mysteriously in London. Except for Prigozhin, the so-called Putin's chef, they haven't also been touched, have they? And that's...
Well, you know, no, they haven't. Some of the Siloviki have. Viktor Ivanov, the head of the intelligence service, the head of the narcotics investigation agency, a couple of them have. But the point here is that, I mean, if we wanted to have an impact on Russia, we would apply Iran-style blocking sanctions against Russian financial institutions, and we could have a crippling effect within a matter of hours. And believe me, Moscow would take notice if we did that. So far, we haven't done it. And the Obama administration also had a fairly weak response to Russian election interference. And we're seeing the consequences of it now as Russia continues with its aggressive actions. But, you know, declaring diplomats persona non grata or putting in place debt and equity restrictions on Russian financial institutions, these are very soft, timid measures. And if we took the sorts of sanctions to Russia that we did to Iran and North Korea, namely blocking sanctions on their banks, we'd have an immediate effect, and we're not doing that.
And again, I'm speaking to Dr. Michael Carpenter, who is a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense with responsibility for Russia, Ukraine, Eurasia, the Balkans, and conventional arms control. He previously served in the White House as a foreign policy advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and as Director for Russia at the National Security Council. He's now a Senior Director of the Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement at the University of Pennsylvania and a Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council. But this also raises serious questions, surely, about what's happening in Russia itself and the extent to which Putin is behind this, as he clearly was behind the Litvinenko. I mean, you don't get polonium-210 off the shelf. And he's also made some fairly...
Yeah, and Ian, I don't think you conduct an assassination operation in a foreign country without Putin's blessing. I just don't see how the intelligence services that he used to command directly would dare to undertake this sort of action without his explicit approval. So the notion to me that he hasn't ordered this and been thoroughly briefed on it is nonsensical. I mean, this is coming from the Kremlin.
But that's what's scary. In other words, has Putin gone rogue or has the FSB gone rogue? My understanding is that there's a concern that the domestic intelligence service, the FSB, which is not as sophisticated as the SVR, the former first directorate of the KGB, and Putin was sort of a wannabe in that regard. He was stuck in Dresden. The talented ones were sent to the NATO capitals and to New York and Washington. And there was always throughout the Cold War an understanding you don't kill each other's spies. And that's obviously been broken, although Putin could argue that he's not killing foreign spies, he's killing his own traitors, as he calls them. But some...
Right, but there's an unwritten understanding in spycraft that after a spy swap, and in this case, Mr. Skripal was pardoned by the Russian state, you don't then go after target and try to assassinate those spies that you've let go and have allowed to travel to a foreign country. So there is an unwritten norm here that's being violated in addition to the obvious international norms against use of chemical weapons, against assassination, etc., extrajudicial killing that's being violated.
Well, I understand.
But to get to your point about, you know, has Putin gone rogue, I see this as a continuation of his covert war against the West. I mean, we saw, you know, military wars in Ukraine and Georgia. We saw Putin in 2016 try to carry out a coup d'etat in Montenegro, which, by the way, also involved an assassination plot against the sitting prime minister of that country because he was chagrined that they were on the verge of joining NATO. And we've seen, of course, the interference in our election, in the French election, in the German election, the Italian election. So we're seeing a more aggressive, no-holds-barred war against the West playing itself out. And this has happened over the course of the last, primarily, the course of the last 4 or 5 years. You could argue it's gone back further than that. But really, the sort of the full-throttle covert war has been over the last 4 or 5 years. And it's having these implications, and we're seeing it bubble up here and there. And if we don't take consequential action against Russia to impose costs, you know, I fear that it'll continue.
Well, my understanding, and indeed this is in the Steele dossier, is that Putin's former chief of staff, Sergei Ivanov, who was a KGB general, very much a superior of Putin's, somebody that had pretty sophisticated. He'd spent a lot of time in Scandinavia and Sweden, etc.
Yeah, I've met him a couple times. He's a very sophisticated character.
Right, and he was the one that was advising Putin that going after the American elections was a terrible idea and that they'd have blowback. And apparently Peskov won that argument and Ivanov was fired. So that would indicate to me, and I'm suggesting that that was the point at which Putin went rogue, but it seems like he's not sort of taking the advice of the more sober people. Just as many people argue now that Donald Trump is on that same trajectory. He gets rid of Rex Tillerson because he's one of the few people that talk back and offered caution. And
called him a moron, by the way,
yes,
as well.
Right. But let's face it, Pompeo has essentially got the job because of his sycophancy.
He's a fierce partisan, Pompeo is.
Right. Right. So you're not going to have any talk back in the Oval Office now. And it sounds like the same thing happened earlier in the Kremlin, that nobody talks back.
I think that's right, Ian. I think what you've seen over the course of the last, especially 5 years, it's been a gradual trend over the course of the Putin presidency and prime ministership. But you've seen a consolidation of power where Putin went from being sort of the chairman of the board, where he balanced different factions within the Russian elite, Western-oriented oligarchs versus the Siloviki that you mentioned, the sort of the hardcore ex-KGB folks. He balanced those various interests for many, many years. Now I think he's the undisputed ruler. He's really a committee of one, and he decides everything himself. He's surrounded himself more and more with yes-men. And, you know, I don't know if it's true that Sergei Ivanov was fired for the reasons you cited, but I've heard that very same explanation. So I think there's something to it that Putin is now getting advice only from the intelligence services. They may be, in fact, slanting that that intelligence, those briefings, and that advice, trying to portray what he wants to hear. And so that is coloring his foreign policy agenda and his game plan, and it's certainly made him more aggressive. He's prone to be aggressive, but I think with the support of folks like Nikolai Patrushev, who, by the way, is one of the fiercest and most aggressive Russian hawks, who is his foreign policy advisor, national security advisor, I should say, he has clearly gone on a much more aggressive bent in the last few years. And there's also been some changes in Russian military thinking. People speak about the Gerasimov doctrine, the doctrine of the chief of staff of the Russian armed forces. It's kind of a misnomer because it's not really Gerasimov's, it's Putin's, and it's not really a doctrine. It's more sort of a modus operandi. But it does, the point of it really is that these people who subscribe to this doctrine, if you will, believe that Russia should be taking on the West in all domains all the time, that Russia can win if it applies asymmetric tactics, that the West is actually much weaker than it looks, and that Russia can prevail in an extended covert war using sort of gray zone unconventional tactics. And so that's what we're seeing play out.
But again, there is this mirror, apparently, between the ascendancy of the hawks in Russia and the ascendancy of the hawks in the White House, because you just mentioned Putin's national security advisor being an ultra hawk. Well, how would you describe John Bolton? I mean, aren't we heading in the same direction?
Absolutely. We are heading in the same direction. And if John Bolton succeeds General McMaster, I'm not a big fan of General McMaster's, but he has some good instincts on some issues. I would say not on all. I disagree with him on a number of things. But if we move to having John Bolton in that position, John Bolton hasn't seen a country that he hasn't wanted to bomb or wage a war against. And going back to Iraq, he's so proud of the Iraq War, he thought that was the best thing ever. And he's advocated use of force in places like North Korea, Iran. It's we're headed to a very dangerous place, which is, I think, where you're going with this line of questioning, in that both the Kremlin is becoming more aggressive and hawkish. This administration seems to be more aggressive and hawkish. And you've got people at the head of the White House, meaning Mr. Trump, who are a little bit unhinged, frankly, and it's frightening in terms of the implications.
Well, just in closing, though, there is this peculiar wrinkle, going back to the beginning of our conversation, without describing Donald Trump as a Putin's Manchurian candidate, there is some peculiar connection. So in the context of the two superpowers, Russia, or the one superpower and the former superpower, Russia and the U.S., heading in a hawkish direction in terms of their leadership and looking into the mirror darkly, is that then to say that if Trump is owned by Putin, is that what's going to stop us having a hot war? I mean, I know it's an ironic question, but...
Yeah. I mean, I think Trump has proven that he's beholden to Putin. We don't know the details of that. We know that Trump tried to lift sanctions against Russia within the first week that he came into office, that he has tried to placate Russia on a number of issues. His first meeting with Putin, by the way, in Hamburg in Germany last year, the outcome of that meeting was a joint cyber unit that the U.S. and Russia were supposed to stand up, and a de-escalation agreement for Syria. Well, how have those panned out? Not too well. So, I think that Trump will be reluctant to go after Russia, and so I think that will probably hold us back from any sort of serious confrontation. Though, by the way, the fact that the U.S. Air Force killed, by all accounts, several hundred Russian mercenaries in Syria shows just how kinetic this confrontation can be, even under Trump. But there's potential for conflicts elsewhere, and that's what really worries me, North Korea, Iran, etc. And with this president, you just don't know what you're going to get. He's so unpredictable, he's so volatile, and so emotional that one just has to be concerned.
Well, Dr. Michael Carpenter, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Michael Carpenter, who's a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense with responsibility for Russia, Ukraine, Eurasia, the Balkans, and conventional arms controls. He previously served in the White House as a foreign policy advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and as Director for Russia at the National Security Council. He's now a Senior Director of the Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement at the University of Pennsylvania and a Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council. We're going to take a brief station break and back examining the speculation in the press that Trump is about to fire his Attorney General, Jeff Sessions.